Welcome to Happyful Finding What Works, a podcast navigating mental health and wellbeing support so you can find what works for you. I'm your host, Kat Nichols, writer, content creator, and curious navigator of all things wellness. Sit back, relax, and let's find what works for us. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first conversation here on Happyful Finding What Works. I'm so excited because today we're going to be delving into the topic of resilience. And I'm joined by resilience coach Alex Pett and writer and presenter for F1 Lawrence Barreto. So before we get into this topic of resilience, I'd love it if you two could introduce yourselves and tell us a bit more about the work that you do. So Alex, I'm going to come to you first.
As you said, I am a resilience coach. So I work with people on transforming their lives and moving out of a place of sort of stuckness and survival into thriving, dealing differently with difficulties, removing limits and stepping up to who they can actually be and who they want to be. So the work I do is a lot about basically connecting people to themselves and helping them to step into who that really is.
Amazing. Thank you, Alex. And yourself, Lawrence.
So while Alex has got a proper job, I essentially just spend my life traveling around the world, following Formula One, interviewing drivers, just trying to tell stories really and kind of bring to life a sport that I really love. So I do a little bit of writing, I do a bit of presenting, I do podcasts, I host events. So it's a real spread, but it's a job that I've always wanted to do. So I'm very lucky that I've got to this spot.
Amazing. So to start this conversation about resilience, I'd really love to hear a bit more about what resilience means to you on a more personal level and maybe any way it's influenced your lives. So again, Alex, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell us a bit more about what resilience means to you?
First of all, can I just say that's the first time anyone's described my job as a proper job. I'm constantly having people go, you do that for a living? That's amazing. So I came to resilience because I lived without it for such a long time, or I lived with such a low level of it that life was extremely difficult. Everything just knocked me over very quickly. I found it impossible to bounce back because my inner narrative was so harsh, so cruel. I was a perfectionist rather than a high achiever. And it was really tough. And things that happened to most people in life would absolutely floor me. And at the same time, I was working as a lawyer in the city, so I was in a very pressured environment. And I was trying to respond to that with really just no resilience tools, no resources. I didn't know how to manage my emotions. Staying psychologically steady was just an absolute pipe dream. I wasn't flexible. I was very rigid. Like I said, things would absolutely take me down if they happened. There wasn't much sort of adaptability there. So obviously that came to a head at a point in my life, as it tends to do. And after that, when I began discovering these resources for resilience and realizing what was missing, it just became this sort of acknowledgement of like, oh my God, this is so important and it's important to everyone. And there's this massive misconception about what resilience actually is. And we can come to that in a minute and I don't want to dominate the discussion, but like, it's really been watching my own life transform through really simple and accessible stuff, but just taking responsibility for what's in your head, what's happened to you in the past, and wrapping it all up in like self-compassion and self-kindness, and realizing that everything I was taught and everything society teaches us isn't that helpful in terms of that stuff. And that's why I became a coach, is because like learning resilience or becoming more resilient, it's simple, but it's not easy. But it is accessible to everyone. So that's basically how I ended up here.
Amazing. I really love that description of it's simple but not easy, because that's so true. Once you know the tools, it is a simple thing to do, but it's not the easiest because of our human nature. And yes, we will definitely get to the misconceptions because I think that's a really important point. But yeah, to come to you, Lawrence, can you tell us a bit more about how resilience has shown up for you in your life?
I think it was really interesting what Alex was saying about society and how that society doesn't really make it that easy for people growing up. I think there's too many misconceptions, like you said. But when I was growing up, I lived in an area where I was a little bit different, or me and my family were a bit different. So I think we just had inbuilt resilience, and in that you just had to crack on with life. You kind of ignored a lot of things that people would say. I think as I was growing up, a lot of people would tell me, oh no, you can't do that, because it would be better if you do something simpler and easier and more likely. And I think a lot of those things were things that my parents faced and what my sister and I faced. And so because of that, I suppose it's bloody mindedness, really. We just kind of took the other option and went down the other extreme and kind of went down the pathway of actually we're going to prove you wrong and we're going to go and try and be the best people that we could be. But I've only been able to do that because I've had very supportive parents, I've got a very supportive family, and I've got very supportive friends. And I think if I didn't have that kind of bubble around me, I don't think it would be possible. But also you need that bubble consistently, so they always need to be around to help you when you have those tougher days that you need them to help you bounce back, really. So when I was growing up, and really every step through my career, I've just found that I'm just a little bit different. And because of that, it's been harder, but it's actually way more satisfying when you get to where you want to get to, because it feels like you've just had to work a little bit harder for it. And it was all the hard work was worth it, really. So that's a little bit of a rambly answer, but I think through my career, because it's just a little bit different. I'm a journalist, I'm a presenter. It's not the normal kind of career that most people take, at least not when I was at school. I remember my careers advisor, she was like, "That's fine, you can try and get to Formula One, but I think you should maybe try and go into banking, because that's like a really good job and it will pay well, and you'll definitely have a better chance of getting into it. And I don't want you to feel like you're never going to get to what your dreams are." And I always remember that story, and it was so silly, really. But at that point, there was a really brief moment where I thought, oh, maybe I should do that. And then my parents were like, no, don't be so silly. So yeah, I think, but without those people, I think it's people, really. You just need people around you to tell you that, because sometimes you can go into this bubble of worrying about things, questioning yourself, not having the self-confidence and things. So that's really kind of been the strength for me, is people.
Yeah, that's so interesting what you say about career-wise as well. And I remember similar things from being a school. I think the creative industries, it can be quite rife, kind of saying like, don't try and do that. I remember saying, you know, similarly, I wanted to be a writer. And there was a point when I was applying for all these different jobs and I couldn't get there. And there was a point where a couple of people said, oh, maybe you should try something else if writing's not working out for you. But as you said, when it's something you're really passionate about and you've got those people around you to support you, to say, no, keep going, you can do this. You keep doing that work. And yeah, well, you've done it and I've done it, so it can be done.
I think what Lawrence said there about resilience coming from other people, like resilience is modeled. So that's a really good point. And it's like, if you have people around you who are lifting those limits that are coming into your head, or which you might be putting, or the careers advisors are terrible at school. Like, they're literally like, take the safe route, you know, just go and work in an office, rather than what are your dreams? What makes you feel good? You know? So I think it's amazing that you ignored all of that, and that your parents ignored all of that, because that's not the typical dynamic. And they were just like, go for it. And I think that's just a prime example of how resilient minds like form resilient minds. So a lot of it is outside influences and the people around us.
That's a really helpful thing to know, and a great thing for our listeners to take away as well, is to be surrounding yourself with people who believe in you and have those thoughts about what you can do and know that you are capable. So we touched on there about different interpretations of resilience and some of the misconceptions. And Alex, I'd love to come for you on this to talk a bit more about the misconceptions of resilience and perhaps anything that you notice when working with clients on the subject.
Yeah, so this is one of my pet hates, because whenever I tell someone I'm a resilience coach, they are sort of, I get that emoji, you know, the arm pump, and it's all like, resilience is about being tough and gritting your teeth and getting through things. And that kind of leads into other narratives like hiding who you are because it doesn't fit with who you think you should be, ignoring your feelings, ignoring self-knowing in favor of what other people think or other people's expectations. And then you get ideas around resilience as kind of, it's got nothing to do with intuition because that's woo-woo, you know, and dismissing self-care, self-compassion and openness as weak, indulgent or soft. So these are all the narratives around resilience, which I find really troubling, as if it's this kind of very brittle thing that sits on the surface of everything else. And you're using it to paper over the cracks and just hope that you can hang on long enough to get through this situation. And the analogy I often use with my clients is, if you think about a tree in the forest, if you've got, you know, a tree that can sway in the winds, then it's going to survive a storm, but a rigid tree is going to snap, you know. So when the storms of life come for us, because they do all the freaking time, right? the last thing you want is to be rigidly holding on to this kind of like, I need to be this person, I need to not show my feelings, and to be so disconnected from yourself that you actually sort of can't bend, you can't be flexible, you've got no resources. So what I would love to get away from with resilience is the idea that it is about toughness, because sure, the outcome might be that you can get through a situation, but what happens to get you to that place of being adaptable, flexible, psychologically steady, all the things we associate with resilience, there's this whole other layer that we miss out, the things that actually make you like that. And those are the things which we can't glamorize on Instagram. You know, it's all like, it's self-compassion. Nobody wants to see that as cool. No one wants to talk about that. But it is a superpower, because it means that you can have a growth mindset. It means that you can get curious about failure. It means you can try again. It means that, you know, your inner critic isn't dominating everything that happens to you, so that when something goes wrong, you just shut down and hate yourself or blame other people. So I think if we could get away from the idea of resilience as strong and tough, and see the fact that it has two layers, you know, and there's this softness that you need to be resilient. It's a soft strength. And without that, you can do it for a short length of time, but you can't paper over those cracks if you don't know who you are, you haven't put the time and effort into understanding your triggers, your past, all the rest of it, and you don't have an understanding of what makes a resilient mindset, you know, how habits play a role in that. So I've kind of vomited everything out there, but that is something that I find I am quite passionate about, this misconception of it and changing that, because when we change it, it makes it accessible and it means it works and actually people can really use it, and it is just life changing.
Absolutely. And I think that's why I was so excited to talk about this topic, is to bring up some more awareness about what resilience really is, because if you see it as that hard, brittle thing, it can put you off it. It can make you think this isn't the right thing for me. But when you realize it is the softness, then yeah, as you said, it's more accessible. And what you said there really reminded me of a quote that I used, I think it was last year or the year before, that I loved. It's from Virginia Woolf, and it's, I am rooted, but I flow. And it's from her book, I think it's The Waves. I'll have to double check that. But it's from a brilliant book. And it just reminded me of the analogy of the tree. Like, you're rooted, so you're connected with yourself, you are connected to where you are, rooted in your life where you are, but you're also able to flow. You're able to kind of move along with whatever happens. And yeah, that just analogy really reminded me of that quote. And it was a mantra that I lived by for a good year or two. So I love that.
It's a great mantra to have.
Yeah, it's a really good one. Yeah, Lawrence, I wonder, has any of that resonated with you in terms of the misconceptions? And do you notice any of that coming up in the work that you do in the media?
I think what I really picked up from that is that people just don't know, like you said, Alex, what you have to do before you get to that point. So I think people feel like they want to be resilient, but they don't know how to get to that point. And I think especially in the presenting industry. So I've kind of spent the last couple of years moving from a writer to being a presenter. And you mentioned like Instagram life. I think often I used to think that being a presenter was very glamorous and everyone was happy all the time and everyone was friends with everyone. But actually, when you spend time with presenters, obviously when they're not on camera, when they're in the office or we're having breakfast together, there's a real worry about whether they're good enough. And I think when you're trying to play up to this perception that you've created in social media, it's actually quite exhausting. And you kind of see that, you only see that if you work with the people who are in that industry. And I think that often I would see people that I've worked with as publicly very resilient, but when you then spend time with them away from the cameras and from social media, they're not so much. And I think they find it very difficult to, and I'm starting to find this a little bit, just to be able to separate out the two worlds. And it isn't just about being tough and trying to just ignore all the bad comments that you have, say, or if people have said horrible things about you, or they've said that what you do isn't very good, or they said that other people are better than you. It's actually quite hard to put that behind you unless you are able to take a step back, or you're able to speak to someone about it, or if someone raises the point to you that it's not right, and you can find yourself going down into a deep hole. So I think that even though I've used to think that I was quite good at being resilient, this is a slightly different world that I'm in now, where the pressures are slightly different. So it's just trying to find new tools that you can use to try and help you cope with it. Because the reality is, this isn't going to change. Like, people are always going to have their opinions. You're always going to present yourself in a certain way because that is the way the brand might want you to present yourself. There's all of these things are always going to happen. It's just whether or not you are able to. And if actually, if you want to find a way to manage that and be on a slightly more level playing field. So yeah, it's something I'm still kind of working through because it's still like a new world that I'm in, but it is something that I've really noticed, particularly when I've gone into like more presenting broadcasting.
That's really interesting, especially about the social media side of things. I hadn't really considered that, but that's a really good point. If you get kind of sucked into that and trying to show off a certain part of yourself, then it becomes harder, I imagine, to be authentic and kind of speak up about when you're going through a difficult time or wanting to be a bit more vulnerable, and whether or not that's appropriate as the face of a brand. That must be quite tough to navigate.
Yeah, and I think it kind of just happens sometimes. I think you just kind of enjoy that really early period of you're kind of building this brand that you're in, you're doing really well in the content that you're making, people are really happy with what you're making, you get fans who are saying that they love what you're doing, and then it reaches this point in which the pressure gets to you because you have to consistently do that every single time. You have to keep up this kind of narrative, and I think that does start to form the longer that you do it. And it's whether or not you're okay with not reading the comments and you're okay with what people having other opinions that maybe don't necessarily agree with you. So it just takes a little bit of time, I think, to adjust to that.
Definitely, and that's the great thing about creating a really varied toolbox when it comes to resilience, I think, is there's so many different situations and there are things that are always going to come along that we're not expecting. Like, you didn't necessarily know that this was what was going to happen when you went into the presenting world, moving more from writing to presenting. And yeah, it's a constant learning journey, I guess. Alex, would you agree with that? It's something we're constantly working on.
Yeah, I would. And I think that's actually one of the major things that we need to acknowledge is that once you achieve a certain level or a certain calmness, it's not going to stay that way because that isn't the way life happens. So it's not really about sort of clinging on to that place, but learning to adapt. And I think what was interesting in what Lawrence said is, to me, it was this sort of message of not having control. Like, you don't have control over how people are going to react to you, what they're going to say about you. And I heard this phrase the other day. It's like, you thought you had control, but all you ever had was anxiety. it's like this kind of sense that we get anxious about things and we think we're somehow influencing them. But the freedom is in realizing that you can't control anybody. But you can control your reactions. You can control how you feel, how much you look after yourself, how much you up the self-nurturance when times get really, really tough. But yeah, the nature of resilience is to be flexible and adaptable, isn't it? So it's perfect for navigating everything that life throws at us.
Absolutely. And I feel like I've noticed a real increase in people talking about resilience in the last couple of years. I've noticed it specifically since the pandemic, but I'm interested to know, Alex, if you've noticed that and why you think it is becoming more front of mind. Is it just to do with the pandemic, or do you think there's other elements at play?
I think self-awareness, mental health, all of that has come to the front of a lot of discussions, including within businesses. I don't know how many corporates are just box ticking when it comes to wellness or whether they're actually investing in their people. The cynical side of me would go down one route there, having been a lawyer. But I think anything to do with how we respond to the challenges in life is much more at the forefront of the conversation. I fear, with resilience becoming a more popular topic, that it's the sort of tough, gritting your teeth element of it that people are reaching for. Because things have been really difficult. They still are. We're like the cost of living crisis and everything. It's a really challenging time. And I think it's also a time in which you're going to notice if you don't have much resilience, because you will just keep getting knocked down with everything that's coming your way. So I think those are some of the reasons why we're talking more about resilience. And maybe just people are looking for different ways forward now, because, you know, if achievement hasn't worked for you in the past, if external validation hasn't worked for you in the past, then maybe you're coming around to the idea that something like resilience might be more of a driving force for making you feel better on a day-to-day basis and positively influencing your experience of life. So yeah, I'm glad people are talking about it, because I think it's incredible, but I hope it's the right discussion. That makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah, there's the risk of it going the other way, as you said, kind of leaning more towards the kind of grittier, harder, brittle version of resilience. And that's why it's important to get these conversations out there and talk to more people. So hopefully we can contribute a little bit to that.
As you said, like, the more we go down that hard, gritty route, the less accessible it is.
Yeah, exactly. And Lawrence, we've spoken a little bit about the media and presenting in that world. I'd be interested to know if you've noticed resilience coming up more in the sport world. I feel I've noticed more celebrities and athletes as well stepping back from things and saying, I need to focus on my mental health, which feels like a really positive part of resilience. But you're obviously in the sport world a lot more than I am. So yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair reflection, Kat, of what's happening in the sporting world, in Formula One, which is the sport that I work in mostly. I think it's a combination of people are more open to talking about it publicly. I think there were a lot of, for a long time, particularly before COVID, so I don't know whether COVID has made a difference or not, but before COVID, people were just a bit afraid to say anything if they were struggling, if they were finding whatever they were doing tough, whether it was personal or work life. And it would just kind of just bumble along under the surface. Whereas I found now, and particularly even just last weekend at the British Grand Prix where I was there, the number of people who were able to talk to me about the fact that they were struggling or they've had a bad day. And those people would just never have done that before. So I do feel like people are, you know, someone said to me, it's okay to cry. And this person I never would have thought would ever cried. But then they did that, and then they had a chat to someone else, and then they've talked about it. And you could just see that they were much better level at that point. And so I think A, is people are able to talk about it more. I think B, it's not as embarrassing, I guess, to talk about it if you're struggling. And therefore, when you can then get to that level beforehand, when you're kind of readying yourself to become a bit tougher or to deal with it in a better way, you've just got the tools ready to go. But I think also once athletes start saying it, people think, well, if it's okay for them to say it, it's okay for me to say it. So I think it's the role models. We kind of touched upon it a little bit with people right at the beginning, but it's role models play a really important part. And I've really noticed that since I've worked in sport, that people really do associate themselves with other people, what they perceive to be successful people. And I think that if they are able to talk about struggling or ways that they've found to cope with scenarios, then I think that does genuinely help people. So I think that's one thing I have noticed in Formula One and in sport, those two things really.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I do feel there's a lot more of an openness, I guess, with kind of celebrities and athletes about how they're feeling and how things are affecting them. And we've definitely noticed it at Happyful, you know, writing pieces about different people. And it does make a real difference when people are willing to kind of open up and say, look, I'm having a tough time. I just need some time to step back. And noting that is a part of resilience is key, I think, and that's something we need to possibly be talking about a bit more. Finding the right tools for you is something we're passionate about here at Happyful. On happyful.com, you can connect with mental health and wellness professionals like counsellors, coaches, nutritionists, hypnotherapists, and holistic therapists located all over the UK. You can also browse our online articles, self-help tips, and subscribe to our monthly magazine for a regular dose of dopamine on your doorstep. If you're keen to explore what might work for you, whatever that may be, visit happyfall.com today. So this podcast is obviously called Finding What Works, so I'd love us to move on to that. And Alex, I'd love for you to tell us a bit more about what it means to work when it comes to resilience. What does it maybe look like when somebody has strong resilience?
So I think on the outside, it probably looks like they're sort of navigating everything in life very effortlessly. But it's probably the internal world that I would rather focus on. And because that's where the true resilience is coming from. And I would say it's things like having a strong connection to yourself, being able to validate yourself. Obviously, we all need some external validation, but it's such a powerful thing to be able to validate yourself. It looks like the courage to be open-hearted in relationships, to be vulnerable, to be able to connect with people and to face up to the discomfort element of all of that. I think it's about self-awareness, being comfortable in your own skin, staying true to yourself and not abandoning yourself in moments that feel triggering. Believing in your goals and dreams and, you know, really going for them like Lawrence described, like, and not abandoning it when someone an external authority figure or someone else says, you know what, you can't do that, can't do that. So not allowing those limits to define you. I think also there's, you know, there's healthy boundaries, emotional intelligence, the ability to plan and progress. And also, obviously, I mentioned compassion. I think compassion is like the fertilizer in a way for everything. And it without that, it's very difficult to be resilient. So all of those things together, I think, give you the ability to survive tough times, which is part of what this is about. But they also give you the ability to thrive, to set yourself up with a life that you will enjoy, that is connected to your values, aligned with what you want and what you believe in, you know, rather than being sort of overcome by social conditioning or what other people think, or staying stuck in the conditioning that you received as a child or something.
I think it's really helpful for people to know what it does mean to be resilient, and understanding all of those parts of it are what it is. And it's not just what it looks like on the surface. As you said, it's the inner world, what's going on within. And I was wondering, we've talked a lot about tools and resources when it comes to resilience. Could you share a bit more on that? So what tools can help people start to be more resilient? I know it's not so simple as do this and then you'll become resilient, but if there's any maybe like first steps you could share for people interested in working on it.
So it does very much depend on the individual and where what their starting point is with resilience, because some people come to me with virtually none, and some people, so they need to be built up to the survival part, and then others are looking to sort of bust through the limits that they know that they're under. So it is quite different. But I'd say a lot of it comes down to core beliefs, which is not a simple topic at all, but these are the beliefs that are formed within the first 7 years of life. They're sitting in your unconscious, basically guiding everything that you do. So for example, if you've got a core belief that earning money is a struggle, you will probably miss all the opportunities to make money easily because of the way the mind works. There's something called the reticular activating system, which is fed by the core beliefs, which will filter out anything that doesn't align with your core beliefs, even if that's good stuff. So getting to the heart of those is really important. And then mindset, which is influenced by core beliefs, but like really looking at, you know, how do you approach every day? Is in a situation, are you, if something bad happens, are you sitting there making assumptions about what someone else is thinking, for example? So you're torturing yourself with something that isn't true. And are you able to stay flexible in situations that are hard, or does your mindset immediately shut down and you're like, well, that's it, I'm a failure, I'm just going to give up. So it's looking at how you respond to the challenges in life. And the other thing is habits. So habits, you know, the things that we do every day, but also the automatic responses we have. So habitual thoughts. So the failure example is the habitual thought in a failure situation might be, I'm the problem, or there's something wrong with me. And that's really harsh. That's, you know, there's not really any way you can go from that. So changing the habitual thoughts, changing the habitual behaviors. And then there are other habits like the things that support development. So do you get outside every day? It's amazing how much of our brain health and our mental health can really just be influenced by going outside, doing some exercise, eating well, and drinking enough water. So there's those habits as well. But yeah, so I would say that core beliefs, mindset, kind of the same part of the same thing, and then habits. And just want to say there's this myth on Instagram and social media that it takes 21 days to form a habit, and it does not. There's all sorts of research been done on this. It can take anywhere from 2 days to 365 days, and there are loads of factors. So if you have tried to form a habit in 21 days and not managed to, it's not because you can't. It's just because the data is wrong.
Thank you for busting that myth. I had no idea. I thought it was 21 days, but that's really helpful to know, because if somebody's trying to form a habit and it's not worked, they might then become self-critical and say, oh, I failed in doing that. And yeah, I think habits in general, that's such a good thing to mention. I think it's not something I really thought about when it came to resilience, but it's such a good point.
Well, it governs everything we do. Like all we do every day is habitual behaviors. And I think there's a statistic that is 80% of what we do every day is 80% of our thoughts are repeated from the day before. So if you start changing those habitual thoughts, even just a little bit every day, it can make a huge difference to what comes next. But just on the habits thing, I just want to mention there are lots of things that can influence it. And if you're someone who has a cycle, for example, a menstrual cycle, and you try and start something new on the first day of your bleed, it's just not going to happen. Whereas if you start it on day 10, you know, it's going to make it much easier. So it's worth taking all of this into account when you're trying to make changes in your life, because and not being hard on yourself and actually looking at the facts of this stuff and not, you know, what the narrative is on. I keep criticizing Instagram. I love Instagram. It's a great place, but it's good to challenge what's put out there, I think.
It definitely is, yeah. And that's all really helpful. That's really helpful points, because there are so many influences on our lives, how we're feeling, our energy levels, what we feel capable of that day. And it's important for us to recognise that. Thank you, Alex. So, Lawrence, in a similar vein, I'd love to know if there are any practices or tools or techniques that you found helpful when it comes to building resilience for yourself.
So I think a takeaway for me from what Alex was just saying is that I think for a long time, I didn't just step away for a few minutes and ask the question, all of those questions that Alex was talking about, asking of yourself, considering all of the things that you do, any of the decisions that you make, the habits that you have, the approaches to life that you take. I just never really took 5 minutes to think about why I was doing it, to even notice I was doing it. And so that's one tool that I've started to do, especially when I'm away, because when we travel and when we work, we do like 15, 16 hour days. And I think it can be quite easy to just get carried away in the moment and you go from one task to the other task, and not take a few minutes. And I found that if you just give yourself like predetermined breaks during the day, just to step away, ideally from everyone really, and either use that opportunity to assess what you've done already, how you felt those things have gone, whether you do anything differently and how you want to make changes going forward, or just take 5 minutes and think about something else completely and just almost just let yourself kind of get away and give yourself like a mental break from it. So that's definitely something that I've done over the last year or so, and it's made a big difference. But the other thing that I've really tried to do is to try and look at signals for when other people might be struggling. So being able to just tell if like colleagues are acting differently, or the things that they're saying or the phrases that they're using have changed, and just trying to identify that so that you can talk to them quietly about it afterwards and seeing if that can help. Because often we work in like group dynamics. So I think the more you can help individuals, the better I will ultimately feel, because then the team environment will be better. So it's just trying to work out lots of different things in the same time. And so that's one thing I've really tried to do going forward, because also when I'm looking out for things in other people, I'm thinking about the way that I'm being or acting or thinking or doing. And so it's kind of works both ways really. So I think particularly in like our unusual quite high pressure environment, I know like it's not an important job, but like it is a work environment which is high pressure, I think trying to notice things like that are quite important, or I found have been quite important to help me cope with doing it, but also try to help the people around me cope with it as well.
I love that. And that's a really lovely thing to be able to think about, to be like, it's not just about you and your perspective and your experience, but also those around you, and recognizing that it's for the greater good. It's a sense of community care, really, making sure those around you are okay and in a good place, because then they can reflect that back to you. They can check in with you and see if you're okay. Yeah, that's a really lovely thing to point out. Thank you. So, Alex, we have mentioned this beforehand, but I'd love to hear a bit more about any certain demographics that you find particularly struggle with resilience.
Oh, there's so many different factors as to, a lot of it depends on your childhood. You know, what was it modeled to you? What resources have you been given growing up? What habitual thoughts? But I would say, and this is a big generalization, I have found that because of the element of softness that is required for resilience, I often find that men do struggle with it, which is kind of counter to what the narrative is, that, you know, men are the strong ones and everything. But in a way, what Lawrence was saying about only having recently got into the habit of self-inquiry and self-understanding and self-discovery, that's something, you know, women tend to journal. If you suggest it to a man, a lot of men would kind of turn their nose up it. And again, that's a huge generalization, and I know that's not everybody. But I would say I have noticed that it is harder for men to allow self-compassion in, because it doesn't fit with the narratives around masculinity in a lot of cases. And there is all of this tension around, you know, the problems that a lot of men are having at the moment in terms of feeling isolated or not having access to mental health resources or feeling lonely. And a lot of this is kind of being blamed on feminism, on women, on, you know, a quest for equality, when actually it's all coming from these patriarchal habits, which create the messaging that, you know, you can't be kind to yourself because that's not what men do. You can't cry. Don't talk about your problems. But I mean, men like Lawrence are the living embodiment of the fact that this is really changing. And, you know, the fact that you are creating this caring community and culture around you where you're actually looking out for signs of other people having a low resilience day as well is hopefully the way that we're moving. But I'm kind of talking about, you know, statistics around male suicide, which is, I'm not an expert on this, so I'm not going to pretend to be, but I do know that suicide involves a lot of shame, and shame is something which thrives when people don't talk about it. And talking about your feelings is something that we don't encourage in men. And I think a lot of women don't encourage it in their men either because of internalized misogyny. So I had a client recently who was saying, you know, I was talking to my friends the other day and, you know, we just had a bit of a cry and we shared what was going on. And my mate was just like, I feel so much better and I don't really know why. And I was like, this is kind of what women have been doing for a long time. So I think access to that side of being a man is what makes it, it's what will make this more accessible for that particular demographic. But I am just loath to generalize because I know that it's not the same for everybody. And I don't want to confuse men and the patriarchy because obviously they're not the same, one's a system. Tricky conversation. But I do think that softness and self-compassion and allowing men to have that and also the sort of self-awareness side of it would make this better.
Absolutely. And yeah, Lawrence, obviously very interested to hear if any of this resonates with you.
Yeah, I think as a society, I think, and it, like you said, Alex, it is a little bit of a generalization, but I think it is true. I do think that men struggle more to talk about feelings, I guess, ultimately. And that's what it is, isn't it? It's just being able to open up about it. But I think the more, going back to the role models idea, I think the more that we see people that we aspire to be or inspire us to talk, if they talk openly about things. There's a driver called Lando Norris who drives for McLaren, and he's been very open about his mental health issues from a very early age and since he's entered motorsport. And he works for the charity Mind, and he's been very open about the struggles that he's had kind of coming through, how he's really hard on himself, how he's way too tough on himself, really. But he's acknowledged that, and he's talked about the tools that he's used to try and get around that. And I just think the very fact that he's talking about it had meant that people within the sport are talking about it. And so I think because of that, I know it sounds very simple, but it's had quite a big impact very quickly. So I think there were people who work for other teams, other drivers are more comfortable about talking about it. People who work in the media and marketing and communications and commercial, all within that sport, because obviously you tend to follow that sport. So you'll probably listen to things that Lando says quite often. Because he's done that, it's given people the confidence maybe to do it. And they, even if they don't publicly say that they're doing it, even if they do what Alex just said, one of her clients didn't just talk to their mate about it or have a cry or just open up a little bit. I think that's a good thing, even if we don't know that's happening, because that will hopefully have like a domino effect with the other people that are around them. But also the perception that if someone says something, if people believe it's the right way, they won't then make a snide comment about it. So even if they don't actively support it, but they reduce the way that they comment on it in a negative way, I think that's a step forward. Because I think generally people are afraid of what people will think of them if they open up, I guess, because it makes them what they perceive to be looking weak. That's how they'll be perceived. But I do genuinely think that is changing, particularly in the sport that I work in. And I hope just generally as well.
It's really interesting to hear, especially in the specific sport, how it's changing and how hopefully that can have a ripple effect as well. And we've touched on it a little bit there about the steps forward for, you know, that demographic and supporting that. But Alex, is there anything you think anyone around people who are struggling with resilience can do to support them? I'm thinking it's probably going to be make a safe space for them to feel they can open up. But yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's allowing people to share, because I think shame shame is such a horrible and pointless emotion. It's a horrible thing to experience, and it has no function, and it thrives in isolation and in the dark, and it can really take over, as anyone who's experienced it will know. It can completely take over your thought processes and narratives and make you very, very stuck. So I think part of it is what Lawrence said earlier, which is kind of like looking for signs of change in people being more withdrawn, or sort of avoiding questions about feelings. You know, if you ask someone how they are, and, you know, we all have a habit of saying, oh, I'm fine. But if someone was previously talking about feelings and is now withdrawing, then that might be a problem. But yeah, making space to talk about something like shame, for example, because as soon as you bring shame into the light, as soon as it's met with compassion or empathy, it just disperses. And it sounds simple and a bit pointless, but that can change everything. It can really suddenly just shine a light on a problem that felt completely unmanageable, like it was going to ruin your life, and like there is no way out. And then you share it and someone's like, oh, me too. Or, you know, we know the strength of that phrase. And just allowing people to be who they are without being judged, to share their problems, and to be human, you know, and not have to live up to some externally defined standard.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really lovely way of putting it. Thank you. And before we kind of wrap up this conversation, I'd love to hear a bit more about resilience coaching and what that involves and how that can potentially support people if they are struggling with this.
Coaching, for anyone who doesn't know, is different to therapy in that therapy is also extremely valuable, but tends to sort of stay focused on the past. Coaching and resilience coaching is very practical. It's focused on action. So what we do is we look at what's coming up for you right now. And that might involve things from the past, but we'd look at sort of how is that resonating in your life right now. And crucially, resilience coaching is all about what do I need to do to move past this? So it's about action in the present to create a different future. And the wonderful thing about resilience coaching is it's a series of small steps. So we take a big sort of real stretch goal and we break it down, and you kind of do all these small steps, and then you get to the end of the process and it's a bit like climbing a mountain. You've kind of been looking down at your feet and you turn back and you're like, oh my gosh, I've climbed the whole thing. And there's so much power in those small steps, because a lot of people think change is one seismic moment when everything shifts, and it's just not. It's the small things that you do every day that are different. So with resilience, as I said, people come with different levels of resilience. So it's about looking at what's getting in the way of that, which might be self-sabotage, imposter syndrome, a really strong inner critic, that kind of thing. Looking at what we can build up together, how we can remove limits, how we can sort of get into the bits of the subconscious that are creating limits or making life difficult, and then creating sort of a plan. It's very practical. It's like, you know, a robust set of tools and habits for you going forward, where you just start to see your life differently and things don't knock you flat. And you can start to imagine a future which may have been sort of under a ceiling before, but now there are no limits. And that's the kind of pinnacle of it, is when the client suddenly like, I didn't know I'd put that limit on myself, and I've now removed it, and now I can do absolutely anything, and I know how.
I mean, that sounds amazing, and I love what you're saying about the small steps leading to being at the top of the mountain, because that's so true. It's about kind of staying on course, taking those small steps, and then taking the time to stop and look around and be like, wow, this is where I am now. So for anyone listening who wants to learn more about resilience coaching and yourselves, where can they connect with you online?
So I have a website, www.shore-coaching.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at alexshorecoaching. Yeah, and also on Life Coach Directory. And I've just started a TikTok, but it's very small. It's the same handle, Alex Shore Coaching.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And yeah, Lawrence, any kind of final thoughts on this topic? And also, can you share where people can connect with you if they would like to?
I just think final thoughts is I've learned loads in this podcast. So it's been lovely to hear from you, Alex, really, because I think that while I've tried to instigate little things in life and try to do things, I haven't really delved enough into it and to find some of the tools that you've talked about, or even just kind of the things that I might look out for now going forward. So I found it really interesting. And you can follow me across all socials on at Laura Barreto.
Well, thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a really enlightening conversation. And for anyone listening, if you want to learn more about coaching, you can head to lifecoach-directory.org.uk and make sure you tune in next week, because we're going to be doing the exhale episode, which is where we'll be sharing some prompts on resilience to help you dive into this topic a little bit more. But yes, until then, please take care. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with anyone you think may benefit and rate and review the podcast. This all helps our mission of creating a happier and healthier society. To delve deeper into the topics discussed today and to find professional support that's right for you, visit happyful.com.